It's Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Yeah, we got a lot of things to do on today's show. We want to talk a little bit about your trees, if you will. Let's a good time to do it. Go out and take a picture of your trees if you don't know what they are. Send me a picture. We'll try to talk about it. Just send it. Just text it to me. Picture of the small leaves. Maybe a picture of the bigger tree as well. Close up. Stand a little far back. Send them both. That provides good information on both scales. And I can help you figure out what it is that you're looking at. And we can talk a little bit about its safety generally. And talk about kind of what you need to do. That's a good thing to do for today's show. We got another hour. We can do that. All you got to do is just text me a photo. That's it. We did end the show, our last segment, talking about aphids. And aphids are on plants. It's the time of year. It's hurricane summer. Isn't it hurricane summer? Tell me it ain't hurricane summer. Every year, April 20th to about October 15th, October 20th, we call it hurricane summer. Maybe more like October 10th. And that's okay. That's the peak of hurricane season. A lot of things happen. A lot of great things happen. And your garden can be very productive. It's a great productive time to get your garden started. But aphids are a problem. And the fire ants, and aphids are a problem this time of year because of the fire ants. Listen, for the most part, getting rid of aphids, because the young aphids are not very mobile. You can just hose them off. It's amazing how effective that is. It's incredibly effective. You had a big crepe myrtle? You think you got some aphid problems up in the top of the crepe myrtle, and you may, particularly if you've got some new growth. And all you got to just use your hose, spray it up there. It happens a lot in spring. You get those aphid problems. Just use the hose. It'll be very effective in spring, knocking those aphids off on a crepe myrtle. And so somebody asked me, well, is the black sooty mold, is that black stuff on the leaves, is that the result of aphids? You're right. That's it. It's the aphids. 100% it's the aphids. It's not, what's happening is the aphids are pooping, and the poop, Charlie's out there counting somewhere. The poop allows a fungus to develop on the honeydew. That's the polite name we give to the poop is honeydew. And the fungus develops on it. It's a black sooty mold. So it's not the sooty mold that's the problem. It's the aphids up there. You can spray those aphids off. You're not going to have the black sooty mold on the leaves. There it is. That simple. If you have the problem on your okra now, which I do on mine, and on your peas, on your southern peas, you don't know what southern pea is, you call me. We'll educate you here. Okra, southern peas, Crowder peas. You might have some aphids on there. That's what happens. It's the fire ants. They're guarding their herd. They're actually, weird as it is, they're actually milking those aphids. They're protecting them from any kind of predators. You can spray the aphids off, and most of the time that works, but the fire ants can be pretty persistent about protecting those aphids and keeping them and helping to build a population. If that's the case, then I would recommend that you use an insecticidal soap. It can work very well. Now, don't come up with your own soap mixture at home. Go ahead and get a good insecticidal soap. You got to figure out how to get it on those plants, but okra and peas, pretty easy. Just spray it on the tips where these tend to occur. You can really control it that way. If that doesn't work, try spinosad. Spinosad, and you're going to have to get a pump-up sprayer for either one, just so you can get good coverage. Spinosad will work pretty well, too, on those aphids. And it'll also help control the ants a little bit. Not much, but a little bit. And that's the thing. Now, if you get a few aphids, it's not a problem. You just don't want it to get out of control and cause big problems. So you're always going to see a few aphids. You're always going to see a few ants. You're never going to get rid of ants. Ever. Ever. There it is. That's the end of the story. You're never going to completely get rid of aphids. all you're concerned about is if the aphid numbers start getting really, really big, and how do you control that? There we go. Now, we've had some callers that have been very, very patient. Let me see. Who's our first caller there? It's who's our first caller? It's it's Julie. Julie, I'm listening. What's up?
Hello.
Yeah, Julie, you have been so patient.
Thank you. Oh, I've just been listening to you.
So tell me what your question is.
Well, I discovered a maypop plant. And
yes,
wondered,
ma'am,
what you could tell me about that. Like,
well, how'd you know to call it maypop?
I beg your pardon?
Who told you to call it maypop? How'd you know it was a maypop?
I looked it up on my phone. I did a Google search of it.
Well, so I was wondering if the name was still in good circulation out there. It's what we called them when I was growing up, maypops. And I don't know why they're called maypops, because generally you can't pop them until June or July or August. But it's a type of passion flower. So when you see, you see the passion fruit juices, well, this is one of that group of plants, and most of them are tropical. But we have two species, at least in Alabama, maypops, because generally you can't pop them until June or July or August. But it's a type of passion flower. So when you see, you see the passion fruit juices. Well, this is one of that group of plants, and most of them are tropical. But we have two species, at least in Alabama, of passion flower. The yellow passion flower, which is quite common in Mobile and Baldwin County, and has a smaller flower, and then the big passion flower, which has this big bluish flower with all of these weird little stamens and all of these little twisted stamens and all kind of weird elaborate flowers, but just a beautiful thing, the passion flower, the maypops. The fruit, and they will produce fruit. The blue one.
Or the purple and one, rather.
Purple, good. Mm-hmm. It is more, from our perspective, more purple than blue. And they will produce big, nice fruit that you can eat.
How big do they get, the fruit?
The fruit gets about, it's bigger than a golf, it's the size of a good large hen's egg. How's that?
Of a what?
Large egg.
Egg, right,
I use
right.
the word hen's egg, which mm-hmm. is...
right now they're about the size of a little bigger than a quail egg and a little smaller than a chicken egg.
Yeah, so they'll be good. So it's, they can get up to the size of a large hen's egg. And they'll turn yellow when they're ripe.
Okay.
And they're often quite edible at that stage, but you got to watch because it's a little dance. You got to catch them at just the right time. And they can be really good. And there was a place I remember in Spring Hill, and I used to ride my bike to work at the botanical gardens, and I'd come up the hill, and it was one of those fancy houses in that fancy neighborhood. But it was a house where they didn't trim as much, and so there's a beautiful maypop growing there. And I'd just grab one of those little maypops right there at the stop sign, and every now and then they'd be so sweet and so good. They were absolutely delicious. Now, of course, everything has been mowed into oblivion in Spring Hill, so they're not there anymore.
That's
too bad. It is a shame. But they're great mm-hmm. plants, maypops. Passion flowers, just wonderful things. Now, if you put one in your yard, you put the seeds in your yard, it's got to go all over creation. Just a word of warning. They are very rambunctious, and it's really great to have them on the street corner like that. I would be cautious about putting one of the native ones in my yard because they really can, particularly the purple one. As much as I love it, you got to have a big space for it because it runs all over.
They tend to take over a lot.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I wanted to grow it up a trellis is what I wanted to do.
And it'll grow. It'll be great on the trellis. The problem is it does sprout from the roots, and the roots have runners, and it'll sprout all over the place. So if you have it, one of the ways to do it is to have a really big container. Now, that might be a way to do it. Have a really, like a big whiskey barrel, and right. plant it in the whiskey barrel. That'll give it enough. It'll have enough room and enough space that it'll grow up that trellis and cover the trellis really nicely. But you won't have those root sprouts going everywhere.
Yeah, that sounds good. Do they attract honeybees and hummingbirds?
No. And you know, you've made me think about that, but no, I don't think they're big honeybee attractors, nor are they big bird attractors. They have the wrong color, but we got to take a break. I'll come, when I come back, I'll mention that and talk a little bit more about that. Hey, good to hear from you. Good to hear from you. Keep me posted on that, Julie. Keep me posted on that Maypop and what you do with it.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Billy Bob in Fairhope sent me a picture. He said he had a pecan limb fall this morning with no wind. he's scared what the field's going to look like by Wednesday. You know, pecans can be a problem, and it's partly because what we want from pecans in terms of pecan production is very different than what we want from pecans in terms of a windfirm tree around a house. I suppose it's possible to prune a pecan, and Chris Francis will disagree with me if he wants, and I'm open to that. I'm always listening to Chris's advice. But I think you could prune a pecan in theory so that it would do less damage, but it's a pretty brittle tree. It's one of the soft hickories that can be pretty brittle. I feel very uncomfortable in general about pecans around the house. You know, in theory, they have a deep tap root and they should be fairly well rooted, but the limb structure is horrendous. And that's one of the things we have to think about. Not only how do the roots do, that's an important question. Not only how much of an immune system they have, that's important too. Pecans don't have a great immune system. But what is the limb structure and what does it look like? And pecans, not great trees to put around your house, folks. I'm just going to say this right off the bat. Another interesting question, and somebody asked me, they wanted to put fertilizer around, they want to know what the best time to put, sorry, not fertilizer, but lime around their live oaks. Well, if it's for the live oak, I don't think it's going to have any benefit at all. Now, in theory, live oaks grow in calcium-rich environments naturally, and maybe it helps, but I'll have to tell you, I've seen a lot of live oaks that have never been limed, and they're just fine. I don't think liming is going to be great for the live oaks. Does it matter what time of year you do it? No, I don't think it does, because one, I don't think it's going to have any significant benefit to the live oak. And two, it wouldn't matter anyway. It just wouldn't matter when you did it. But on the other hand, if it's only for the live oak you're doing it, yeah. Hey, Chris, so we had this argument. Sean and I had this argument. Chris, don't be offended. Sean and I had this argument. You know, Sean said, Chris is going to hate you calling him on the day of a hurricane. He just hates it when you do that. And I said, yeah, but so, Chris, give us a call. Let's talk. We got a lot of things to talk about this morning. So in our next segment coming up, we're going to have Chris Francis on. We're going to talk about some of these things. And I'm going to ask Chris about the question about lime and live oaks. That's a good one. That's a good one. Hey, Cade, you've been very patient. Are you still there? Bill, I'm listening. What's up?
I'm here. I sent you a picture last week of these white, grubby-looking things that I was afraid it was going to hatch every century or so and turn out to be this evil, whatever. And you responded that it was a distant relative of the mint family. And if I'm saying it correctly, is it Stachys floridans?
Stachys. Oh, man. Stachys. It's, you know what most folks call it? They call it rattlesnake weed. Because those little tubers look like rattlesnakes. But here's the fun part, and so, Bill, here's the really fun part. Those are absolutely delicious. They're very mild tasting, but they remind me of a light radish with just a slightly milky flavor. And you can take those, as long as you haven't been putting a lot of herbicides in your yawn, you can take those and just stir fry them up while they're fresh. Just barely stir fry them and a little bit of oil. They're just absolutely delicious. I love it. You can put them in salads. And in fact, they're a delicacy. In China, these roots are a delicacy. Now, it's a slightly different species, but they taste exactly the same. In France, these roots are a delicacy. Staccas roots are a delicacy. We call them rattlesnake. So they're an issue. Bill, let me tell you real quickly. The reason people have a problem with them in their lawn is because they don't mow in winter. If you mow in winter, you're not going to have a problem with these competing with anything in your lawn. And I could go into the details, but just trust me. Meanwhile, if you've got an easy way to dig them, boy, they're really great. You know, they're just a really wonderful things to eat.
Well, I've just moved into this house a few months ago, and I'm starting to dig a bit and planting trees and things like that. And it seems like everywhere I dig, I got them.
Yeah. So it's that's right, and it happens. And it's probably because your lawn has, if they're in the lawn, it's because the lawn has never been mowed in winter. And if all you got to do is, and you'll suppress that growth in winter by mowing in winter. If they're in your beds, the key is dig them up in winter. Dig them up in November. Trust me. I won't go into the detail, but if you dig them in November and December, or you pull them, you weed them out in November and December, you're not going to have a problem with them. If you wait until April and May, it'll be too late to weed them. They'll have already set that tuber. They're already below ground. So it all depends on where you want it. On the other hand, you can just eat the things, and they're great. Just as long as there's not in contact with any crazy chemicals, like the termiticide around your house, or the termiticide, or any of the other weird chemicals that people put in their yard, they're completely safe. They're delicious, and they're fun to eat.
Well, I'll give them a try.
Good.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, Bill. Good to hear from you.
Thanks.
So here's the thing. Gamecock Girl has got a really pitiful crepe myrtle. Gamecock Girl, if you will send me a picture of the base of that crepe myrtle, I think something's going wrong there. You just send me take a picture right near the base, a little bit around the base. It looks like something funky's going on there. But there could be a lot of problems. Let me get a little more information before we, and you may have to call in at some point and talk about that tree. But let's get a picture, and let's look at that base just a little more closely. There could be several things that are causing a problem. Somebody asked what would cause my rosemaries and my flower beds to turn brown and wilt. Well, rosemaries get root rot pretty easily. They really love well-drained soil. If you're irrigating your beds, or if those beds are getting too much moisture, too much rainfall, it'll whack the rosemaries really bad. They love well-drained soil. They can live for a long time, not forever, about 4 or 5 years. Pretty good. They look great, but it needs to be well-drained soil. One of the things to do is to prepare for the fact that rosemaries don't live forever, and get some other things planted there, or plant back more rosemaries. But the soil needs to be well-drained. I would say if you've got a problem with rosemaries right now, it is because the soil is a little bit too wet. I'm going to try to hit a few more questions here. Somebody said, what plants do I plant on the north side of my house for foundation plants? Let me just tell you something. There's a lot of things we can do. But first off, do not plant those plants against the house. It's always a bad deal, always bad thing to plant right slap dab against the house. Come out 3 feet from the house first. I'm just telling you, 3 feet from the house first, and then plant. So your beds, and nobody will notice. It's not a bad thing. It doesn't make your beds look worse. It just means your plants live. But in that first 3 feet, particularly on the north side of the house, you're going to have problems with everything. Bring those plants out at least 3 feet away from the house, and you're actually going to get a good bit of sunlight most of the year. You're not going to get enough light for things to flower, with a few exceptions. And it depends on what size plant you want. So you might want to call me and talk about what size plant you want, and then we can go a little bit, we can do a little bit more talking about what you're looking for in terms of a foundation plant. But here's the simple story. Come out at least 3 feet before you start planting. And I could go into all the reasons why. That's the best advice I can give you. You come out 3 or 4 feet, you can plant most anything because you're actually going to get a decent amount of sunlight unless you have a big overhang. So call me. Let's talk about that specifically, and we'll see what we do. What else? What other calls have we got before we go into this break? Yeah. So we're going to text is what I mean to say here, and I'm looking through them. Jim, I'm thinking about your daylily question. I'm not sure how to address it, but I'm thinking about it. And yeah, Gamecock girl, I'm seeing what I'm thinking is a funky little situation. And I think your tree was not planted well. We're going to talk about that when we come back, because I can see that my break is coming on me. Isn't it about time for the break there? And not quite. Just a few seconds. I knew it was coming. Gamecock girl, that tree is planted too deep. We're going to talk about it. I can see it. I can see it bad. We'll be back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right. Listen, I want to get back to this real quick because we've got a lot of fun things that can happen here. I get to talk to my good friend, which we don't talk except on the radio show. We ought to remedy that. So Chris Francis is calling in. We're going to talk. John in Irvington said he found a few chinkapins in Atmore. And John, let me tell you something. What you found was something really cool. What you found was an oak tree, which is not a chinkapin. It's sometimes called, and I believe the oak tree you found, based on the leaves that I'm looking at, is probably a chinkapin oak. But it's called a chinkapin oak because the leaves resemble a chinkapin. It is not a chinkapin. Nevertheless, it is a cool oak. It's either a chinkapin oak or Misho's oak, swamp chestnut oak. But it is a cool oak, and you're going to plant those acorns, and like acorns always do, they turn into oak trees. It will not turn into a chinkapin, and you're not going to be able to eat the seeds of it. But it's called a chinkapin oak because the leaves somewhat resemble a chinkapin. How is that? Is that clear? Just by the way, it's a good thing you got. But I don't want you thinking you're going to be able to eat that, because chinkapins produce chinkapins, not acorns. And it's a very different kind of fruit. They're just, it ain't the same thing. But what you got is pretty cool. And I'm curious as to where you got it, because chinkapin oaks are not that common down in South Alabama. They occur a lot around Stephen. In South Monroe County, South Choctaw County, various places in the Lime Hills, you'll see them. Gamecock girl wants to know how you can fix it, and I'm gonna think about where Chris is on. We're gonna talk a little bit about it. Gamecock girl, help me a little bit because there's a black strap that I'm seeing sticking out around the trunk, and that can tell me a little bit about what's happening. Tell me where that black strap came from. But Chris, dadgummit, we ought to talk more.
I remember we had that long conversation about Knoll Park. It seems like just yesterday, but it's probably about 6 months ago.
yeah.
yeah, you're right. We do.
Yeah, so Chris and I, we when we talk, we have a great time, and we ought to do it more often because we, you know, we're both tree nerds in our own way, and we love to talk about trees. We talk about a lot of other things. So Chris is one of our great arborists here around along the Gulf Coast, and let me explain what an arborist is just for you folks. That's somebody. It ain't a tree mortician. It ain't somebody who comes and cuts down your trees just because that's the thing to do. An arborist is somebody who knows how to take care of your trees, and that's what Chris is specializing is in. And Chris would also want me to say that there are a number of good arborists, and all kind of on friendly terms. And there's some great arborists around Mobile. They've had real certification. They do great work. So when we talk about trees, I'm just going to say this out loud. When we talk about trees and we talk about what you need to do to your trees, the idea is that you need to have an arborist. Now, let me say, I don't get paid for saying that. I'm saying that because it is my experience that even I can't do the work. I don't even know what to do sometimes. And so I have to call in an arborist to do the kind of work that needs to be done on your trees. And to be safe, that's what you need to do. Chris, we've been talking a lot about hurricane trees today. I go off on my own yammering on this. You want to jump on me and change anything?
I think you're pretty much on the money. It's, you know, we get a big storm, even great, healthy, structurally sound trees, they're going to have issues. But where we're really going to see the problems are the trees that have major issues. And so, you know, we can have failures of all sorts of types, but, you know, you covered the species thing. You know, we definitely see a lot of failures in water oak, in laurel oak, largely due to decay in the trunk and in the root system, and then we have some branching issues. See a lot of pecans split apart, you know, Bradford pear, you know, things that. So, but yeah, we're going to have certain species that are just going to fall apart, just, you know, all over the place. But then we're going to have, say, a live oak come apart, and somebody's going to say, "I don't understand. The tree was healthy. It was green. That shouldn't have failed." And so, you know, we have to separate that health and structural component. That's the number one thing. And so just because the tree looks healthy doesn't mean that it's structurally sound. So we really have to separate those. And so one of the major reasons that we'll see a whole tree come over is cut roots. And so those cut roots may have occurred very recently, or they may have occurred 10 years ago. Installation of underground utilities, you got water, you got power, sewer, phone, cable, internet, irrigation systems, all those things. And have people tell me all the time, "We're only going like 1 foot deep." Okay, well, that's where the roots are. That's where the bulk of the roots are. And so you go 1 foot deep and you trench through the roots. Well, there's not multiple layers of roots down there. And so, you know, trees really rely on that lateral root system coming out. And so, you know, those roots are supporting that tree. They're anchoring it in. And what happens, especially on a vulnerable species, when you cut through those roots, then hopefully it calluses over or it can regenerate some new roots. But what often happens is it starts that decay process. And from the point of that cut, it starts moving decay closer and closer to the trunk. And then you may get a slight breeze or maybe a heavy wind or, you know, a little bit of rain. Sometimes we have failures on regular days, nothing's going on at all, and tree comes over, and eventually that root system rots out. So, you know, be careful, you know, cutting roots or you know, don't cut roots. Get an arborist involved. There are ways to go underneath roots. There are ways to go around, find where those roots are. So that's something that's really important, is those roots. We'll see trees split. Typically that's codominance, which you can basically look at and say we've got two trunks instead of one trunk and multiple limbs, and then the bark inclusion. So if you look at the angle of that attachment, how they come together, as trunk on the left and trunk on the right grow, they kind of squeeze bark in between them, so they're not grafting, they're not connecting, and that's where we see a lot of failures of trees splitting apart. A lot of these things can be remedied. So like a bark inclusion, we could, in a young tree, we would fix that with pruning, pretty aggressive structural pruning. In a mature tree, you don't want to cut that limb off. Let's say you cut one of the trunks off. Well, yeah, now we fixed it to where it's not going to split. However, you're going to have a lot of decay moving in from that big cut. And so then we'd be looking at supplemental support. We've got brace rods, cables, potentially props. So there are things. And like you said, it's, you know, you really need somebody that specializes and focuses in on that. And so, you know, and that's where the arborist comes in.
Yeah, and, you know, I guess I could argue that if you lived in Minnesota, you could get by without this. Well, I don't live in Minnesota, so I don't know. But I'm always imagining there's a place in, like, Minnesota where you don't have to worry about it. But here in Alabama, particularly in South Alabama with these storms, we really do have to think about our trees more carefully because of the amount of damage they do. So, yeah, you just got to put it in your budget. I mean, you just have to put this in your budget. It's just like, you know, it's like buying insurance. It's like paying taxes. You have to, if you have a house, you need to budget for thinking about what you do with the trees. That's my shtick, and I'm sticking to it. It's really important, to do that. There's a person who's just sent me a picture, and I asked people to do this, to identify their tree. And I can tell you, looking at the trunk together with the leaves, that it is not a live oak, nor is it a water oak, but it is a laurel oak.
Yeah.
Yep. And yeah. It's probably Hemispherica, I'm guessing. It looks much like Hemispherica. So that's nerd talk. But so we know it's an upland laurel oak. Chris, so... what do you think about laurel oaks in general?
My experience with laurel oaks is they act just like a water oak. They're not compartmentalizing decay. They're very susceptible to hypoxylin canker. They're very susceptible to root rot, various butt rots. They grow up fast and then they fall apart. And so, you know, and that's in general. I have found mature laurel oaks and water oaks both that, to my surprise, were not hollow, you know, were not, you know, have major problems. And so, you know, I've definitely had trees that I've encountered that a client calls and says, hey, we love this tree. We've met with three other tree services, and they all tell me we have to cut this down because it's a water oak, and it's going to be rotten, and it's going to fall on our house. And so we get some sophisticated equipment out there, and we look at it, and we basically look inside the tree, kind of imagine like an X-ray of a tree, and we determine it's not rotten. It's not hollow. And so you've got a solid tree. And you know, your tree, cut it down if you want to, but you know, to assume that it's hollow, you know, it would be incorrect because it's not. And like I say, we're typically with mature laurel and water both, we find that there is significant decay in those, but not always.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true. And I always the caveat is that up at my family's old place, there was a tree that was a water oak that was gigantic when my father was born in 1936, and it's still standing. So it's probably 100 and, you know, it's probably 180-year-old tree. It's big and. In certain ideal environments, even laurel oaks, particularly swamp laurel oaks, can live a long time and don't get the rot. But most urban landscapes are not ideal environments, so right. They don't live quite as long.
That's right. And that's
we got to take a break.
We got a break, but yeah, it's taking a tree out of the forest and putting it in an urban environment. That's where we really run into the problems.
That's right. So we're going to be back, folks, with Chris and to talk more about your trees and try to answer your questions as quickly as possible. We got to talk to Gamecock Girl about her crepe myrtle.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
So let's get back to this. This is fun. Chris Francis is here with me. One of my a friend from way back, great arborist, and so we're talking about trees. Hey, Chris, there's a we got to answer some specific questions. Gamecock Girl sent me a picture of a crepe myrtle, and I she said it's been in the ground for 5 years, and it keeps losing its leaves, which happens to crepe myrtles this time of year normally, but apparently this loses its leaves frequently. It's not doing well. It's not growing well. It never blooms. And I said, give me a close-up. And I looked at the close-up, and it when that thing comes out of the ground, there ain't no root taper. The roots must be 12 inches. You know, the root crown must be 6-8 inches under the ground. And there's a cloth on top of it. So I told Gamecock Girl, and we're just going to go with this assumption, that tree is planted awful deep, and I think it's got some problems as a result of it. It's also got some ground, some kind of ground cloth around it that's probably messing the tree up. It's weird looking. Chris, so the tree's been there for 5 years. You're going to hate this question because I hate it too. Chris, it's been there for 5 years. What do you do?
Well, it's a safe assumption that it's planted too deep, even without the description and the pictures, because most plants are planted too deep, even if they're planted by a landscape company, a professional, even if they're planted by, you know, somebody that's been doing it for 30 years or, you know, whatever it is. We find that most trees are planted too deep. But, yeah, with the description, it's definitely planted too deep. The best thing to do for that is to decide if it's worth throwing more money at, because it's going to take, or time, either way, it's going to take some time or money to really sort that out. And so you've got to remove the soil from around it and get down and expose that trunk flare. I like to use air. You could use gloves and, you know, manpower and just kind of, you know, dig the soil out. You could use water. You don't really want to use a pressure washer because it's just too harsh. It's just too much pressure and blast the bark off, especially a thin bark species like crepe myrtle. But yeah, you got to get that soil out of there. You got to expose that trunk flare. Unfortunately, what you'll probably find is are a lot of roots that are wrapping around and strangling, girdling the trunk. If they're small in diameter, then you can prune those out. If they're really large in diameter, then, you know, remember, those roots are coming from that tree. And so cutting those roots, while you may be helping it, you're also hurting it. And so that becomes the real trick, is trying to figure that out. And then if there's straps and hardware cloth and stuff like that, then that's a mess. It may be easier in her situation just to plant another tree and then make sure that it's planted correctly.
That's what I
trees being planted incorrectly.
Yeah, and then Gamecock Girl, when you get ready, this is so you heard it out of the horse's mouth here. You need to just start over. I mean, that tree is going to be one problem after another, and it was planted too deep. When you get ready to replant, and ask me, let's talk next week about what you can replant with that might have fewer problems than crepe myrtles, because crepe myrtles got some big problems now.
Oh, yeah.
But let's also talk about how to plant it, and we'll talk a little bit more about that so you won't run into this problem. Yeah. So there we go.
How about the live oak question with the pH?
Yeah. What do you think about that?
Yeah. You know, live oak will live in a wide range of pH, just potential of hydrogen, and so. You know, just because it will live there doesn't necessarily mean that it likes, you know, one end or the other. And I've seen, you know, live oaks growing in wide ranges of pH, and they seem to be fine. Ideally, slightly acidic, you know, which is probably closer to 6.5. So, you know, I would say get a soil sample. I can't pick up your soil and hold it in my hand and tell you the pH. I can't tell you the nutrient levels that are in there or anything else. So you got to get a soil sample. They're cheap. Get a soil sample, figure out what's in there. If you send off, you know, somewhere like Auburn and say, hey, my tree is a live oak and here's the soil sample, they're going to give you specific recommendations for your tree. And so they'll tell you, you know, add this much lime and this much, you know, whatever your tree needs. It's going to tell you their macro, micronutrients, everything else. So that being said, I would try to keep the pH closer to that slightly acidic range. I think it's going to perform better. I think the nutrient levels aren't going to be locked up on one end or the other. It's going to do a lot right. better. There is some research that shows that certain decay fungi like Ganoderma is going to do much better in acidic situations, and they aren't going to grow at all, much like a lot of the human, you know, problems, aren't going to grow at all, you know, when they get to the alkaline side. The trick is a lot of those are inside the tree. They're in non-conductive tissue in the tree, basically dead parts, the middle of the tree. It's not active. And so changing the soil pH after you already have a fungal infestation inside the tree, is that going to change the pH inside the tree? I don't think so. But potentially it could keep something from starting or keep something from spreading, you know, into those conductive tissues. I think there's some water. I think there's something there, but I wouldn't be overly concerned about it. And I definitely wouldn't just go lime every tree that you have. Get a soil sample and figure that out first.
Yeah, and it's complicated because when Chris says slightly acid, he means slightly acid. He doesn't mean really acid. So this is a hard language to do, and we don't have enough time to get into it in detail. But if your pH is below 5, you're probably seeing some restriction in growth on that tree. I agree.
Yep.
If your pH is between 5 and 6, it's probably not perfect, but it's probably not going to see much restriction in growth. If your pH is above 7, however, you could run into some problems, and so you don't want it to be. You want to be careful about the lime, because lime can change the soil more than you like. I will also add that in their native situation, live oaks were not spread all over creation like they are now. This is kind of unnatural. But in their native situation, where I see live oaks the most, where it's clear that that's where they occurred the most from historic records, is on shell mounds. They were really abundant. So the pH was pretty, calcium availability was pretty high on those shell mounds, no question. So they do have a higher tolerance for pH than most trees. Yeah. Chris, there's one more question, and we're going to hate that we don't have enough time to talk about this, but we get this question a lot. And this guy asked me in an open-ended way. He said, I got a couple of sweet gums. The roots are all over the yard. How do I smooth those roots out? How do I smooth things out so that I can mow over it without stumbling over the roots? Ooh. Usually I get the question is, what's the best time for me to cut the roots on these trees so that I don't have to stumble over them in my yard?
Oh,
Chris, we got to deal with that next week.
And we're at the end. Don't do it. Don't do that.
Don't do it. So we're going to come back next week. I wish we had more time to do it. Chris, it's been great. We got to do this more often, buddy.
That's right.
All right.
Great
Thanks.
Talking with you.
You too. Hey, great talking to you guys. We'll be back next week.